There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
You know what my favorite text is? A waypoint in the Onyx Hunt app to a goblin turkey. The list on the Onyx Hunt app features for chasing turkeys is long, but knowing exact public and private boundaries and land ownership details will help you find more places to hunt, whether that's on public or private. I'll be toting the Hunt app through the spring woods in a few states this year, and I recommend you do the same if you want more turkeys on your table. Also, Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onyxmaps.com/hunt this spring. Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems on the island of Maui. They've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now. Become a snack subscriber and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNuiVenison.com. And use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order. My name is Clay Newcomb, and this is a production of the Bear Grease Podcast called the Bear Grease Render, where we render down, dive deeper, and look behind the scenes of the actual Bear Grease Podcast. Presented by FHF Gear, American-made, purpose-built hunting and fishing gear that's designed to be as rugged as the places we explore.
Gary's, that beard's filling out, man.
Looking good.
It's tight up against his face.
Look like he's groomed it.
Yeah.
Groomed it a little bit. Excelente. Pull it up. Yeah, about like that.
The bottom of Rusty's beard is actually a wildlife management area.
12,000 acres.
I mean, Drew Slough.
I've only known you for about 5 minutes, but I feel like I can ascertain that immediately. That's a WMA right there.
Some rough terrain.
Oh, man. Well, great to see everybody fine afternoon. This is the best, one of the nicest afternoons we've had in a while.
It is. Doors open.
Doors open, yeah, here at the global headquarters.
Right.
Hey, to my left, Daniel Roop, Dr. Dan Roop. Good to see you, Dan.
Happy to be here.
We're going to talk about this podcast, the Secret Whitetail Secrets podcast. And I have two secret guests here that I'm going to wait
till
the end.
We're not even going to tell you who they are the whole podcast.
We're going to disguise their their voices the entire time.
Hi, my name is...
Oh, I've got a story. But so we've got two secret guests. I would also like to take just a second. And for anybody who is listening to this for the first time and don't understand the format of Bear Grease, I want to fill you in, okay? The Bear Grease podcast is a documentary-style podcast where we have multiple guests. We tell stories. It's highly produced. We produce that every 2 weeks. Every other week, in the off week, we have a Bear Grease render. And render is a metaphor. Okay. Metaphor is when you use a word that is not actually literally used, but metaphorically used. That word is a type and a shadow of the real word. So when you render bear fat, it turns into bear grease, and it's a process of heating that melts it down. And so in essence, we're taking the Bear Grease documentary style podcast. We're rendering it down metaphorically.
Bringing the guests in. Lighting them on fire.
Yes. And then so the Bear Grease render is where we all sit down and talk about the big podcast. So that's what this is.
And it's okay to make fun of you in the process, right?
Yes.
Okay.
That's part. So if the adjective for the podcast is highly produced, what would the adjective for the render be?
Like train mediocrely, wreck.
Mediocrely it's like train produced. Wreck. So skipping over our secret guest, which we'll come back to, Josh Spillmaker. Great to see you,
well,
Landbridge
you.
Spillmaker.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Yeah. You've been doing a little fly fishing.
I've been fly fishing a lot, even in the... We had 10 inches of snow last week, and I went out in it, and then...
Trout,
I don't
care.
I went out on Saturday, I guess, and it was... The temperature was about 18 degrees, but man, that wind chill was something.
Mm-hmm.
And my reel was literally frozen, wouldn't turn. My line, I'd have to dip my rod in the water every few minutes because my guides would fill full of ice.
Mm.
But caught some nice fish.
Did you?
Yeah. Went with my friend Keith Reeves. Do you know Keith Reeves?
Yes.
Yeah. That was the first time I've met him. And he actually, well, I'll tell you what he messaged me on Instagram once we get started talking about the podcast because it's apropos.
He wanted to know.
Apropos.
He wanted to know. Yeah.
He wanted to know where I was fishing.
Mm.
And he said, "Are you willing to share?" And I had to sit there and think for a little bit. Am I willing to share my
hot spot? He's asked me. He's seen a picture of me deer hunting by a creek in Arkansas. And he asked me where the creek was.
Now, did he want to fish the creek?
He wanted to fish the creek.
That's fair. That's fair. You're not a fish in the creek.
No,
he's a pretty avid hunter, though, too. He's a pretty avid hunter, though.
Good guy.
Great, fantastic.
To Josh's left, back from wherever he's been. Like
again?
The Black Panther himself, Gary Newcomb.
Yeah, good to be here.
Hey, Gary Newcomb.
Hey.
Good to see you.
Hey, thank you.
Hey, this dude has been all the way to California.
On the campaign trail.
There you go. There you go, man.
Now, tell us a little bit about your trip to California. What were you doing? Where'd you go?
Well, there were four couples, and we all traveled by ourselves, and we ended up in the sand dunes of Southern California, Glamis, the most famous, best dunes in America,
mm-hmm.
supposedly. We stayed there 4 days, and then we went north about 2 hours to King of the Hammers in the
which
desert.
Is a
Johnson
UTV
Valley.
Race,
huh?
Which
UTV
is like
race,
a,
yeah. It was
UTV
everything:
race.
Big jeeps, little jeeps, motorcycles. Every day there was a race going on.
Yeah.
And we stayed there about 5 days, and it was just extremely wonderful. And I couldn't believe it. My sweet little wife really enjoyed it.
That's what I heard.
I mean, it's just crazy. She'd go, "Hey, no, let's not leave yet. I want to see this guy flip."
Tell him about the one place where those guys were flipping, and she
Judy
wouldn't
race?
Leave.
Did
no,
Judy race?
She a couple times she got in a fetal position riding with me. You got to get your mind right. This is the safest thing we've done in 3 days. You know, the interstate, you're liable to die any second.
I have seen a photo of one of your side-by-sides consumed in a ball of fire.
Oh, yeah. Luckily, I wasn't in it, though. I mean, I just left it, obviously.
We're going to get
lucky
to that.
I was lucky to get out. But anyway, you know, there's several places that are just, it's just crazy to watch this race, what they do. They go through the desert at 100, 110, 150 miles an hour. Then they go through the rocks at 2 and 3 miles an hour. They go down big drop-offs, up drop, you know, climb huge stuff. And it takes quite a vehicle to do all that.
Yeah.
So anyway.
So my life as a young man was filled with what I just thought was normal. Turns out it wasn't.
That explains a lot.
riding in four-wheelers, side-by-sides, Jeeps with this guy. Hey, we're going to come back to your story. Let me introduce our secret guest.
Mm.
All right. Directly across from us.
Oh, did it give out? I think the chair just gave out.
Did it just break?
Yeah.
Dan Roop's chair just
finally
broke. We knew this was going to happen.
The moment has come.
Yeah, well, go ahead and just.
Now you just got a stool to
say. It's retired.
Do whatever you need to do.
I apologize,
it's retired.
Guys. We're good.
There we go.
Keep going.
All right. Mo Shepherd, my good buddy, Mo Shepherd.
The man, the myth, the legend.
Also known as Mosley Shepherd.
I didn't know that until the podcast,
well,
actually.
Okay.
I didn't know
either. I've got some explaining to do. Mo, greet everybody.
How's everybody doing today? Glad to be here doing this render cast. So.
Yeah, man.
I've known Mo for a long time. I don't know, 15 years maybe. Maybe not that long. I meant what I said. Mo's one of the best mountain deer hunters that I know, hunting some rough ground and just going out and doing it. He knows what he's doing.
You don't
keep secrets.
You don't find Mo's house on accident.
Yeah.
You better know where you're going.
That's right. That's right.
Yep.
So I'm going to introduce the other guests, and then I'm going to tell why they have nicknames. To his left, no stranger to the Berry's render, Rusty Johnson. Like Rusty Mike. Curly Johnson. Yeah, good to see you, man.
Good to see you. So glad to be here.
Both of you guys were my – when I decided I was going to do a podcast on secrets – I thought Daniel Roop because he's got a lot of secrets, and then I thought you two because y'all are good at keeping secrets. And okay, here's what happened. Originally, the idea of this podcast, I was going to keep their identity sealed. Did you notice there was some incongruency in the names? Did you notice that? I'm pointing.
Maybe.
Do you even know what we're talking about?
No.
This podcast is about a podcast?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, you weren't paying attention.
You lost me in the metaphor talk. Okay. I thought we're greasing something up. I didn't know what was going on.
So originally I was going to interview these two guys and I was going to hide their identity because it was going to be a joke. As if they were telling secrets that were going to get them in trouble and get them killed or something. And so when we sent it to production at Meat Eater, I was like, hey, let's disguise their voices like they do on the movies. Like when they're interviewing a mobster who's wanting to leak some info but not get in trouble. And so I built the podcast like that, and I gave him code names. And his name was – Mo's name was Mosley, and I just randomly – Mo and Curly. So
I just put that together.
Rusty Johnson was just Curly. And so I built all the voiceovers for these podcasts. I don't know if you guys know this, but there's actually quite a bit of work that goes into these podcasts.
Oh, really?
And I built the
I thought you just recorded them on your cell phone.
Who does the work?
me? No. We got a great production team at Meat Eater that does a lot of it.
I just thought that was their names.
Well, okay. I never specifically said, like, I just introduced him as Rusty Johnson. And then what I failed to do was when I finally listened to it, we decided we did not like the disguised voices. So I was like, we just need to just come out with it and say their names. So I changed the voiceover in two spots, but I forgot to change the voiceover in all the other spots. So I was calling them Mosley and Curly. And so Rusty messages me that Wednesday it came out, and he said, why is everybody calling me Curly?
So, it's like an inside joke Clay didn't tell you about.
Yeah, exactly.
Come into work, and everybody's like, morning, Curly. I hadn't listened to the podcast yet, and I'm like, what? Curly? Have you listened to the podcast yet? Nope, you might want to.
How's Beach Nut taking hold?
Oh, it's doing pretty good.
Getting some traction?
I say Beach Nut. Yeah, Spencer Newhart's nickname is getting some traction. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So we're gonna get back to you guys. But I did promise the world that I was gonna ask you, I need you to tell us about the image that I put on Instagram about 3 weeks ago of a side by side in the it was kind of a pretty photo. It was like
pretty disturbing.
Yeah, it was like kind of twilighty, and there's about a side-by-side just engulfed
like completely
in flames,
like engulfed.
30-foot tall flames.
Nothing, ain't nothing left of that side-by-side. That's why I said it's a crime scene, and Gary's covering his tracks.
Yeah. Yeah. So I told people that I would have you tell that story. What the heck happened?
Judy was over in the corner in the fetal position.
it was real interesting to me in that my nephew and I ride together a lot, and we like to ride fast, and we just enjoy getting together, and we did that a lot. Well, I had a 16 model Razor, and all of a sudden it started coming out in publications that these things were burning. So my Sean Marriott called me, and he goes, hey, Gary, those Razors are burning. And I said, you know, I read that. And I said, but it's only when they get hot. And he said, I watch my temperature.
Sean is a rocket scientist.
That man is a genius. I usually have to get hot when they burn.
So I watch my temperature gauge, and I don't let mine get hot. So I'm fine.
Smart.
So I was going on about a 150-mile trip. Actually, well, I won't tell you where I was going, but I went through the mountains and through the woods.
Secret.
We don't know anything.
I looked at Rusty, your old home grounds. I was heading down there. So on the way back, this was brand new.
You were riding by yourself.
Yeah, by myself, and it's a turbo, and I'm real excited.
150-mile ride.
Yeah, real. And so I take my gas cans. Instead of stacking them in there the way they were, I got this great idea that I had a better way of doing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
It wasn't a better way. So I just drive this distance, and on the way back, I take a few little jumps and runs and, you know, bouncing off stuff, filling that turbo. Well, about the third time I got airborne, when I landed, those gas cans turned over.
Mm.
And, you know, at the time, I didn't see a lot of danger to me. But when I look back and comments from people, they go, you know, you were pretty lucky to get out of there. And so, you know, if it had been a wreck, you might get trapped. But anyway, I got out. There was no way to put it out.
What happened? I mean, you're just riding heat.
Was it dripping on the exhaust?
Like, we're looking in the back, and I'm seeing, I'm running about 40 miles an hour, and there's flames, you know, shooting up. So I, of course, slam on the brakes, and I look for water. I look for dirt, look for anything. There's nothing there. So I just backed off. I left a real expensive pair of binoculars, and I regret it.
That's the only thing you regret.
Yeah. I had good insurance. So anyway, I just thought, man, I got about a 6-mile walk out of here.
You could have lit a signal fire.
I think he did.
Well, I tell you.
I think he did. It didn't work.
Dang.
I walked to the highest hill I could find and called James Lawrence.
Yeah.
And he came and got me.
Yeah.
So,
and he probably just sniffed you out. He knew exactly where you were by the cell phone.
James said, I felt a disturbance in the forest.
Exactly.
I knew there was a fire over there.
You dialed his number, but you could hear his phone ringing. He stepped out from behind an oak tree.
I've been watching you this whole time.
Yeah, I saw that coming, Gary.
The aluminum was melted. The engine, I mean, everything was just, it was nothing. The steel was remaining. That's about it.
And yeah.
Holy cow.
And my Swarovskis were melted.
Hey, I agree with what some of the people commented on. I read some of them comments because you got that hot machine, you got all that stuff, and you got gas cans in there that turned overnight. It's a wonder that thing didn't blow and just blow you and everything.
Yeah, I know. You know, that could have been the real danger. But they had a hose that was coming loose when it got hot, and it was dripping fuel on the turbo, and that was causing them to burn up. But mine was because...
Somebody had set gas cans in the wrong place.
That's right.
It is. I mean, it sounds like a very safe activity when you describe it all. I feel like.
Yeah. You trust me.
Driving around with a bomb.
Well, anybody else here ever had a machine catch on fire?
I did see in Mena, Arkansas. I pulled up to the stoplight right there by the what's the train there downtown? What's that? I can't remember what that gas station is right there. But I looked over, and there's an old man, and I see smoke coming from under his hood. And within 2 seconds, there were flames rolling out, and he's at the gas pump. And I see him get back in the car and try to start it so he could drive it off. Oh, and he's in the car, and somebody comes running out of the gas station, grabs him out of the car, and reaches in and puts it in neutral, and they push it away from the... from the gas pumps, and everybody
was
just
intense.
Yeah, trying to get the heck
out
of Dodge.
One time, I had a 1991 Jeep Cherokee. The year was probably 2005, 2006.
Was it red?
It was kind of burgundy-ish. Yeah. And one day, I was driving to the U of A, and I'm in Fayetteville, Arkansas, driving down College, and I see smoke start to come out from underneath the hood. And I just go, oh, man, that's not good. And I was within about a half a mile from an O'Reilly's and kind of downhill. And so I just thought, I'm going to make it to O'Reilly's.
We'll ride this thing out.
And so I just made it into, and the car was driving, the Jeep was driving fine. I pull into O'Reilly's and there's more smoke coming out from under the hood. And I pop it, open the hood, and there is a pack rat nest on top of the hood that is in flames.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, just like when I opened the hood, it was like, yeah, that's what I needed, oxygen. And so it just went. And so I run into the O'Reilly's and there's like people in line, you know, and everybody's just standing there being quiet, like waiting. And I go, hey, my Jeep's on fire in the parking lot. And I promise you, the guy behind the counter, I mean, it was like he could have cared less. He was just like, he just kind of, people won't be able to see what I'm doing. I'm acting like I'm a 60-year-old man that doesn't care. And he was just like, what? And I was like, my Jeep is on fire. Do you have a fire extinguisher or water or anything? And he was just like, well, there's a bathroom over there.
There's a toilet full of water.
There's a pitcher. There's a pitcher over there. And I just run behind the counter, grab this pitcher, run back to the bathroom, put it under the sink, and get the pitcher only about halfway
full of
water.
Meanwhile, your Jeep's outside getting Gary Newcombed.
And I run back outside and just douse the Jeep. And luckily, it never fully caught on fire. It just kind of burned all the hoses on the top. And but that pack rat nest burned up.
You've had some bad luck with pack rats.
Pack
in your
rats
vehicles.
Will destroy your life.
Yeah, I had one vehicle burn up on me in 79. I had an old 69 Volkswagen I'd bought the year I graduated out of school. And this was year after that, and I'd cut it down, made a Baja bug out of it. To make a long story short, I was out in the mountains out there in the Ozark National Forest just riding some old trails. And I guess I'd accumulated leaves up around the engine on the back of that old Volkswagen.
Mm.
Didn't know it, and they got up around the manifold, and I was driving down the main road up there. I'd come out of the woods, kind of like Gary said a while ago, I was driving along, it was about dusky dark, and I could just see an illumination inside the Volkswagen Baja bug. And I turned around and looked, and the whole back console behind the back seat was on fire.
Oh, wow.
And I slid it off the road, run over and went to getting dirt out of the ditch. And I finally got it put out, but it melted the motor and everything. It was trash after that.
Oh, they're darn.
Man.
So three out of six of us here have had vehicles burn, mine being the least. Have you ever had anything burn?
No.
Rusty Johnson, never had one burn down.
Nope.
Wow, you're
like
really
I said, I got
fortunate.
The fire put out, but it done trashed it. It burnt all the wire and
apparently
everything,
it's
and I
an
didn't
epidemic.
Mess with fixing it.
I'm not talking. This is a podcast on secrets. Is burgundy not red?
I mean, it, no. No. No.
Burgundy
is like dark purple.
That's red.
Yeah.
Burgundy is burgundy. That's why they call it burgundy.
One more story that's relevant to the time, okay? And then we're going to actually get in there and start talking about this podcast, because I've got a few things I need to draw out of Rusty and Mo. Okay.
Good luck.
So today is February 14th. It's Valentine's Day. We're recording this on Valentine's Day. This will come out
as
on
a gift
February
to our
15th.
Wives.
February 13th. Does anybody know what February 13th is?
It's the day before yesterday. Valentine's Day.
Yesterday, the day before Valentine's Day. Dad will know. But you wouldn't know this, but in my house, February 13th is Jackhammer Day.
Jackhammer Day.
When I was, do you remember?
No.
When I was a junior in high school, one day I went and I had baited some hogs.
Jackhammer like the broadhead?
Well, just wait.
Okay.
24 years ago.
Calm down, Josh.
Was it 24 years ago?
Was this
I was
a
junior in high school.
Aren't you 40? Junior year or your...
It was my first junior year.
Okay. Aren't you 40?
I'm 42.
Oh, okay. Well, then it was 26 years ago.
Yeah.
You're older than you look.
So, hey, that was a compliment. I thought he was digging on me.
Yeah. No.
No, that was a compliment. Yeah, oh, thanks, Mo. That was nice. I was a junior in high school, and I had baited some hogs down on some land, and I'm not going to tell you where it was. And what I had done was I had dug a hole in the ground about probably 18 to 20 inches deep and about probably 20 inches wide. So envision a circle hole in the ground. The hole was near a creek, and the creek was in a big, flat, hardwood bottom. And there was a, the ground came up out of the creek and was flat for about 20 yards, and then had like a 10 to 12 foot steep rise, and then it flattened out again. So it was like a secondary floodplain, if that makes, does that make sense?
Yep.
You'll see this
like
in a lot.
Steep bank.
Like a steep bank. Well, what I did was I put that hole about 15 yards from the rim of the higher bank so that I could walk up and peek over the bank down to the creek to this hole in the ground.
Bushwhack the hogs.
Okay, that's exactly right. So I filled that hole with corn. And we didn't have trail cameras or anything back then. I mean, just nobody was using trail cameras. And I even raked out the leaves about 50 yards going up to where you look over the edge so that I could walk without making any noise. And I set the trap and just waited. You know, I can't remember if I waited 4 or 5 days or how I knew that there were hogs in there. I may have just been guessing that they would be there. And this is the kind of dad Gary Newcomb was. The night before, I just had a inkling that it was the day to go. And I said, hey, I'm not going to go to school tomorrow. I'm going to go hunt those hogs. Do you remember that? Okay, he's shaking
his head.
Probably
didn't even tell him.
I did. I really did. I just told him. I was like, I'm going to hunt hogs. And because I remember the next day being in the classes that I missed. For some reason, I vividly remember the look on one of my teacher's faces. He wasn't angry. I just remember it.
Just disappointed. So
I go down there, get there just after daylight, and it just worked like clockwork. I walked in those, the leaf where I'd scratched the leaves back, and I'm carrying a 65-pound pull, High Country X, what was it? High Country?
Excalibur.
Excalibur with hatchet cams, shooting about a 500-grain arrow. And at that time, we were shooting Jackhammer Wasp broadheads, which is an expandable broadhead. And at the time, it was like, I mean, we just were shocked at how good they killed deer. Right, Dad?
Absolutely.
I mean, just because we were coming out, you know, those were some, that was kind of the first gen mechanical.
I think
mechanical
I still
head.
Have some that I got from you back then.
Yeah, I bet you do. Did you ever shoot jackhammers?
No.
Yeah. No. Well, so Rusty was, that was kind of a judgmental no. Rusty was like, no. Nah. I never shot jackhammers.
His beard's a WMA. What do you think? I think he shoots jackhammers.
Mo, did you ever shoot mechanical broadheads?
You don't shoot mechanicals in recurves and longbows.
That's right. That's right. Mo's, that's the ultimate like slap. He's like, big men, real men don't use mechanical broadheads. Well, no, they did real good with deer. And I walk up over this rise just after daylight. I didn't hear hogs. I wonder if they're there. And man, I raise up over the little bank looking down, and there is a big hog with his head completely submerged in that hole. I mean, just like, he can't see me. He's down there crunching corn. And I mean, here I am, and I'm just like, holy cow, it worked. You know, I'm just a kid, you know, like 16, maybe 17.
You're very excited at that moment.
And he's standing there broadside. I think it was 18 yards. And so, I mean, I had arrow knocked. I was ready. I drew that bow back and just put it right behind his shoulder and shot. And man, that arrow looked like it bounced off of him. The arrow just stuck him right where I was aiming, just right behind the shoulder, just like I would have shot a deer. And he literally kind of grunted and just plowed, you know, just disappeared, you know. And within 10 yards of that hole, that arrow was laying on the ground. And I just was in shock. I mean, it more or less bounced off of the hog. And I walked down there, and it had about how much penetration?
I remember that so well.
We've got a picture of it. I mean, probably 3 inches of penetration.
And that's to hit him in that big shield.
Oh, yeah.
See, you trusted your dad. It's like Tyler, the time I told him how to jump a sand dune, and it almost killed him because he did it exactly the way I said. I told Clay how good those jackhammers were.
Yeah.
He trusted me.
Well, that was the beginning point of us learning that you couldn't shoot those hogs right behind the shoulder with a, especially with an expandable head, and not a big hog. I mean, it was a big hog. I mean, it was a 300-plus pound hog, I believe, based upon the track. And I was pretty good at judging their weight by track back in those days. Mm. And anyway, jackhammer day. Because, listen, this is all coming back around. I know y'all are just like, where is this going? Where is he taking us? Listen, the next day, I go to a young lady's house who I happen to be courting. Her name was Misty.
Does Misty know about her?
That's why Misty's not here today. It's all so historic. This is confession
Misty,
time.
Misty had made a vow not long before that she would never marry a hunter. And This was early in our relationship. And I recounted the story of what had just happened to me, just like the day before. And she had never heard anyone tell a hunting story. And it immediately, she was like, I like this guy.
I'm in love.
I can live with this.
I'm in love with
this
man.
Can you believe that? That is a great Valentine's story.
Yeah. Jackhammer
Day.
True love.
Jackhammer
Day. Story of true love.
So last night, while we're at church, she texted me in the meeting. Okay. Yep. It happened. And she said, happy Jackhammer Day. She remembered all on her own.
There you go.
I wondered if she would.
You need to get one of those jackhammers and like, put it in epoxy, like clear epoxy, so she can keep it on her
shaped
desk.
In a heart.
Yeah,
shaped in a heart.
Epoxy shaped heart. Now if that's not romance, I don't know what is.
Me neither. So I had to tell that story on Valentine's Day.
Whitetail Institute launched the food plot revolution in 1988 with a concentration on research and real-world testing of forage products specifically for whitetail deer. Whitetail Institute's research and development team of agronomy experts provide effective, personalized service. I've been using Imperial Whitetail Clover for a long time in a food plot back behind my house. In 2007, I killed the biggest buck of my life over an Imperial Whitetail Clover small quarter-acre food plot. Imperial Whitetail Clover is the only clover scientifically developed through years of selective breeding. Clover Extreme genetic stability provides extreme cold tolerance, disease, and drought tolerance. It really does. Clover is coated with Whitetail Institute's Rain Bond, a polymer coating added for enhanced seedling survivability. They have an exclusive offer for Bear Grease listeners, 15% off Imperial Clover when you use the code BEAR at whitetailinstitute.com. That's whitetailinstitute.com and use code BEAR for 15% off. Sport Dog is the most recognized brand in the hunting dog training industry. Born in 2003 in Knoxville, Tennessee, Sport Dog was forged by a passionate group of hunters and dog trainers who intimately understood the challenges of the field and the special connection between hunters and their dogs. The people at Sport Dog know that having a well-trained hunting dog is more than just having a reliable partner. It's a commitment to their safety and unlocking their full potential. The Sport Dog promise to customers is simple. Gear the way you design it. Every product Sport Dog builds is meticulously designed and rigorously tested in the field, ensuring it withstands the toughest conditions you and your dog may encounter. Trust Sport Dog, where innovation meets passion, to elevate your hunting experience and strengthen the bond with your local companion. Using tracking equipment on my squirrel and coon dogs is extremely important to me. To track my squirrel dogs and my one old coon dog that's not very good. Get 20% off your first purchase using the code BEARGREASE. Go to www.sportdog.com/BEARGREASE to learn more. The old timers say that the turkeys start gobbling when the leaves are as big as squirrels' ears and the red buds start popping. And we're about there. And we are there in the South. The Onyx Hunt app is one of my most valuable tools in the spring woods. With tools like coniferous versus deciduous tree distribution layer, you can save time by locating edges or transition areas of mixing habitats from home. Find an area like this with water in close proximity, and more than likely, there will be a goblin turkey nearby. Knowing the exact boundaries of private ground ensures I stay on the right side of the fence, but can easily find public ground to go see if I can't strike a gobbler. If you do get one to sound off, using compass mode and waypoints will help you pinpoint his exact location, allowing you to move in and make the perfect setup to bring him right into your lap. Download the Onyx Hunt app today. You'll be glad you did. Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onyxmaps.com/hunt this spring.
All right, Mo, so you were really in the dark on what I was doing with this podcast. You just kind of trusted me.
Yeah.
I've
made that mistake several times.
Don't say mistake.
Did I pull through on being trustworthy, or were you like, doggone it, he pinned me in the corner? So that's why I had you here. So you could, anything defend that I yourself. Made you look like, you can defend yourself now.
Defend myself, huh?
I mean, if you're like, well, nah, it was all okay, then we're fine.
Well, I guess most of it was, but
most of it.
Yeah, you didn't tell me all the truths of what was going on when we first started.
Okay.
Yeah, you first told me, you know, that our voices was going to be disguised, nobody'd know who we were or anything.
Yeah.
And then the podcast comes out and you introduce us. Uh-huh. So I thought, well, he didn't do anything he said he was going to do. So other than that, it was pretty good. So.
Hey, at least you knew you were being recorded. It has happened before. Yeah.
Snuck it in their recordings.
I did a whole podcast just now.
Okay, Rusty, do you feel like you've been cheated in any way by me?
No, but, you know, whenever you asked me to do it, I didn't know. I mean, I asked you, how could I prepare? You know, is there anything I can do to prepare? Oh, no, it's going to be easy. Typical Clay Newcomb. It's going to be easy. Don't worry about it. It's going to be easy. But, no, it turned out pretty good. I mean, you caught me off guard on a couple, but.
Yeah. Well, I've got some dirt. I mean, I could release the full episodes of these. I talked to these guys for like an hour.
But remember, if you do that, you gotta release the stuff that I asked you that you didn't put on there.
Yeah,
either.
Mo turned the tables after a while. He was like, "Hey, what about you?" Now,
thank you, Mo.
Then Clay says, "Well, no, this is going to be on the podcast. So don't worry about it. We don't need to talk about it." So,
yeah, I bet he did. Scrambled there for a minute, didn't he?
Well, I did put at the end Dan interviewing me.
Yeah,
so I thought that was fair.
Yeah, but he don't know you as well as like me and Rusty and Josh and us do. So,
what y'all think of the podcast?
I thought it was. I actually didn't know where the podcast was going in the beginning, and I thought it was really good because, you know, I had a great talk with Keith about this stuff because there's a lot of guys that are real secretive about stuff. I have had a different upbringing inside of hunting and fishing, especially that. I feel like I almost feel an obligation to share what I know because I know so many people have shared with me. So, mm-hmm. You know, I think being able to foster a love for being outdoors and hunting and fishing sometimes trumps keeping it secret.
Sure.
But,
sure.
You know, that's coming from me from a totally different experience in life with hunting.
Yeah. So you're coming from a very, like, kind of quote unquote healthy hunting background. Clay's like an abused child.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Undereducated, abused.
Yeah. But it was interesting that Keith texted me because he hadn't heard the podcast.
Oh, okay.
And he said, "Hey, I was just wondering. I'm going out to Beaver Dam, and I'm just wondering if you had any spots that you would feel comfortable sharing." I was like, "Well, how about I go with you, and if I feel good about it, I'll show you a couple spots."
You know, I think it's possible some people, I heard some people's comments on it, and I don't think they really listened to the whole podcast. So what we did here was we used hunting just as an entry point to talk about the way people manage information they have. Mm-hmm. You know, so like, yeah, we talked about hunting secrets. And that was kind of what we used. But really, we were looking at, you could have made that podcast about tennis.
Yep.
It's how we share information and why we share information.
Or why we don't.
Or why we don't. And who we share it with. And, you know, it really was a study for me because it happened just the way I said it. I was sitting in a tree up here on November 1st, and I had a picture of this big deer, and there was nothing more that I wanted to do. I mean, like, I'm like scrolling through my phone trying to find somebody to send it to that I hadn't. And I'd send it to very few people. I'd send it to probably everybody in this room. I'd shared it with Mo and Rusty. And I told you all different versions of that story of where it came from. All different versions of where it came from. This is a public land deer in Kansas. This is a... No, I'm just kidding. No. And I was just like, this is weird. And I had, it's not like this is the first time I've ever thought of this. We share stuff with people because we like to share something with like-minded people. But really, it's deeper than that. You know, it is a request for friendship, if you really think about
it. It really is.
And that's what Dan did such a good job of describing, just kind of going back into human psychology. And it's like, we trade information for stuff, and that stuff is friendship, and we want to trust people. Like, I want to be able to send Rusty a picture, and it's like, hey, I'm giving you something that I can trust you with.
You want to, but you can't.
I really want to, but
I want to, Rusty.
But Dad, what did you think about it?
You know, it was very revealing, even though I think deep down most of us realize why we share information. in my thoughts on it, change a bit, you know, off and on. Like, I just had the thought that we share for entertainment. I get this with some of my writing buddies where, you know, one goes, hey, man, I'm right in the middle of a business deal. I just can't talk about fun stuff. I mean, that's the exact words. I don't have time to talk about fun stuff. So we love to share. I can't wait to tell him something that I've done with my machine. You know, I want to talk about it. So it's really fun. It's like you take a trip and people say preparation is as much fun as your vacation. And a hunting trip especially. You're preparing. You're shooting your bow. You're getting your equipment. You're buying this. You're buying that. You're getting ready. That's as much fun as going out there and sitting in a tree for 5 or 6 days and not seeing a deer. You know, I mean, so there's a social aspect. I'd be interested to see what you say about that. But that's entertainment. And most of that entertainment, I think, is survival. You know, I'm trying to survive. I'm Gary Newcomb. I'm trying to survive. I got to have mental health, physical health. I can just go to spiritual. I can just go down the list. I need all that to be healthy. And to be healthy, I can't be taking care of Dan Roop. I got to take care of me.
None of us can.
So, yeah. So, you know, we do things to make each of those aspects of our life stronger. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to build my image up in Dan's eyes so he will respect me more. Right. I want to show him a picture of this deer so he'll know for sure that I'm probably a better hunter than Clay. You know, I mean, so everything you said, I agree with.
Where would you put the entertainment, though?
But you know, you didn't put the entertainment in there.
That's because I'm not very good. But as you're saying, entertainment makes me think. You know, a lot of times entertainment, we can kind of talk about it. It almost has like a negative connotation. Oh, you're just wasting your time on so much entertainment, or we'll go to some kind of entertainment to distract ourselves from what we really need to be doing. But sharing things that bring us joy has immense amount of value. I mean, that's really what entertainment is.
Is that not relationship building?
And that is relationship building.
I think that would be like a subcategory, because you're not sharing entertaining stuff with someone that you aren't in, that doesn't have some interest in what you're doing.
Absolutely.
And you're trying to say, man, I need somebody that'll laugh with me today. Yeah.
And it's more than if social media is kind of pseudo identity validation. I get a like and I kind of feel better, but also don't, like,
Rusty.
So
I knew that was coming.
So I knew that was, he even looked at you, grinned me that curly beard. I know why they call you curly. But like
Rusty Johnson, WMA.
WMA. But you know, like watching a TV show, that's one thing that's entertaining, but going out and sharing an experience in the real world that you both value and you both derive joy from. And that's true entertainment, and it builds true, you know, really deep relationships. So there's a ton of
value.
You
know, I would say, and I'm building off what you're saying, because there are plenty of, it's not like, yeah, this was like an exhaustive look into human psychology, but entertainment would be, or just having fun is a massive part. I mean, I am friends with people that I have fun with.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm very friends with very few people in a deep way that I don't enjoy and laugh with them. I mean, you know.
And I think because if you're going to have fun with somebody, you got to be able to relax in it. You got, and it's almost as if whatever kind of facade you put up wherever you go to think you got to be a certain way, when you're around somebody that you can really let your guard down, I feel
you
like
you can take off that stick on mustache, Dan.
I feel like if I can let that guard down, then I can really enjoy something. And I only let that guard down with certain people. And so maybe the real secret is like me being myself, you know, mm-hmm. And I reveal that to certain people, and then I can really enjoy, you know, whatever it is we're doing.
Yeah. Hey, we love to tell stories. I mean, it's, if I've got a good story, I mean, it's, I can't hardly, like when you were going, Dad, I want to hear something from you. I didn't get too excited about telling about the fire. I was thinking about some other stuff I'd love to tell, you know, so.
But I can't.
I mean, it's fun. It does something internally. You just like it. You know, you're the center of attention. You're just doing what you want to do. So I think that's real important in our lives, is to have something to say that has meaning to other people, well, and you can get their attention.
Yeah. What gives it value is that when you tell a story and we tell you, yeah, that was a great story. Just in whatever way we do that, you know.
Right, right.
That is really meaningful. It validates identity. It really does. When I stand up and tell a story and you guys laugh, it reinforces to me that I am who I thought I was.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the truth. You know what I'm saying?
You know, the way that gets away from secrets, but the secret could be I'm doing that to build myself up in Rusty's eyes. He doesn't know me, you know, so I'm trying to tell a story to impress him that, hey, this is really a good guy. Or this guy's a great hunter or whatever.
Just don't go riding side
by
side.
Most things are real selfish, you know.
Rusty, what'd you think?
Well, I mean, I had fun doing it, but I got kind of a story too. So after the podcast, my son, Rustin, he's like, Dad, he said, you know, you've taught me a lot of stuff. And he said, I've mainly picked it up by just watching you. He said, you are so secretive. You're so used to keeping everything such a secret. You don't even open up to your own son. He said, why not? He said, you should, of all people, you should open up to me about everything that you know. Everything that you
so
know.
So this got real.
Yeah.
And?
I said, you got a good point. I mean, I want to be so secretive about all this stuff that I'd neglect my own son.
Now, just to clarify, the on the podcast, you talked about how your son, who I know and is a friend of mine, Rustin, is your adult son. He's, how old is Rustin?
He's 25.
25. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, you guys hunt together like you're, I mean, like best friends.
Yeah.
I mean, y'all hunt. So y'all, he's not talking, you're not keeping hunting secrets from him.
Look at the hesitation.
I mean, I don't.
I mean, it's not like you're, I mean, you're sharing deer. So what, tell me what he's talking about.
Just like certain like strategies and, you know, why do you do this or why do you not do this? He says that I don't explain myself. You know, if I'm doing something, I'm just expecting him to watch and figure it out on his own.
So he's critiquing your communication mechanism. Right. He's not saying, Dad, you're withholding me because you're
intentionally
afraid. Yeah, he's just saying you're so used to not communicating, you're not communicating with
him. I'm not purposely withholding information from him. And my dad was the same way. He did not purposely withhold stuff, but I mean, he didn't communicate. He was so secretive of a guy that he would not just open up and just freely communicate verbally to what he was doing and why he was doing it. I had to really watch, and it took years of watching him doing what he does. And our friend Dalton, he says the same thing. He's like, man, he said, I've picked up so many things just by being around you without you even having to say anything, you yeah. know, I've learned a lot basically through osmosis, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But Rustin's like, man, he said, you need to just open up to me and just tell me everything and explain everything. Just open up.
Mm. I
find myself not doing that when I should be doing that, especially to him.
Yeah.
It does say a lot that he feels like he can say that to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that says it done. He wants to, you guys are obviously close, but the fact that he can say that means he just wants even more of you.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, this podcast is actually, I mean, it's opened my eyes to some stuff like that I think is going to help me and him.
No, that's good, man.
Yeah.
Mo, what'd you think? Just in general, I mean, did it?
Yeah, I've had several texts. I've even talked to a couple of my friends, and, you know, they said, that's very interesting. Said, we didn't realize that, you know.
You were like, holding out on
it? Yeah,
him?
Like a couple of them told me. They said, what have you not told us about, or what have you not showed us a picture of? I said, well, you probably never know, because if I haven't showed you by now, I'm not going to or tell you either one. So we had some pretty good laughs about that, like I said, in person or on the phone or even by text message. There's been several people, my friends, my hunting friends, and even some of my work friends that listen to it and stuff.
Mo, I know that you and your wife hunt and fish together. Are there pictures of game on your phone that you won't show your wife?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Just checking,
yeah.
It is Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
You better show
Hey, baby, I want to show you a picture of this buck. I've been saving this one.
She doesn't deer hunt a lot. She likes to go when the weather's nice and stuff like that. She don't like the cold weather and stuff.
I can't figure out why wives are so contingent on the weather. Because my wife's the same way.
Her favorite thing to do is turkey hunt. She loves turkey hunt. So
that's how I met Mo, turkey hunting on the youth turkey
years
hunt.
Ago yeah. down by a spot we won't reveal.
That's right. and he's a heck of a turkey guide.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dan, what was your overall take of it? I mean, you were on the podcast,
yeah.
But any thoughts afterwards?
No, similar.
How
to
do
Rusty,
you feel like you did?
Okay. actually, similar to Rusty. So I've got if my daughter was ever interested in it, it'd be awesome. But I've got three sons who, to varying degrees, are right now they're 16, 14, and 12. And to varying degrees, you know, we've just been back in the States functionally to kind of hunt for about a year. And I think after even talking it out loud with you and then thinking about it and realizing how important it is to me, like what happens inside of me when I hunt and I do what I do, I've never wanted to force anything, especially on my boys. I wanted them to feel like they could kind of decide who they were for themselves, and if they wanted to do something like I do, that's great. But if not, then I'm going to, in a way, kind of with that kind of stuff that I deem as like entertainment, what Gary said, or kind of like almost like a hobby. I don't want to shove that down there, you know, who they are. But I think, so one of the things that I'm going to do is this summer, over the summer, I'm going to get set up to where I can take my boys out in a tree with me. You know, I've only been hunting back in the woods this is my first fall back in the woods after being mm-hmm. gone for a long time. But I just think, man, I got to get my boys out there. They gotta have this opportunity, because it's way more. It is entertainment, and it is a hobby, and it's fun, but it's also part of who I am. And my boys will want that, and I want to give them the opportunity
to
try.
Have you ever thought about sending them with Rusty?
That beard, have you seen it? There's no way.
That beard's got more secrets than all of us have in our anywhere.
I think I've seen part of a hog walla fall out a while ago.
No, that's my main kind of like, that's a big part. I mean, it's a huge part of who I am, and my boys, I don't know how much they know that. And I know if I don't, that there will come a day when, I mean, you've shared a ton with your son, clearly, but I know my boys there will come a day when they're like, hey, why don't you? So like, that's my top priority this summer,
yeah,
is getting set up to where when, you know, I'm whitetails. I'm not much of a buck hunter. I really dial in on the does.
That's good.
Like, I can say something to you. I've taken a lot of young kids for their first turkey hunt, their first deer hunt, bear hunts.
Yeah.
You know, cousins, nephews, stuff like that. And I unlike what Rusty was talking about, his son, that's something I'm pretty secretive with my hunting buddies and stuff, you know. But when it's the youth I've got with me, I find myself sharing a lot of stuff. I'll tell them, you know, I done this because, or we're doing this because it helps us do this or helps us stand a chance of doing this. But I also learned that to keep them interested, no matter what, you got to, when you're hunting with the youth, whether it's your kids or somebody else, you got to keep it fun for them.
Yeah.
When they're ready to go, I don't care if there's three deer walking in front of your blind out there, let's go.
Let's go. Yeah.
Because if you get them, wore out on it, they don't, they come disinterested in it. So I just thought I'd put that in. Benji said,
that's great. Mm-hmm. That's great.
You know, I think the main thing is that, and I hope what a podcast like this would do would just get people thinking, you know, just kind of thinking about why we do the things we do. Because I've said it so many times on Bear Grease that I'm very interested in the things that drive us that we don't consciously make decisions about. You know, we don't, and I think that self-awareness is pretty important. So regardless if somebody comes to the conclusions that we did, or maybe their situation is slightly different, but the idea is to make people think and just kind of become more aware of why you do what you do, because there's always reasons why we do what we do, and we just kind of flow on autopilot. And you know, so we talked about social media, and I'll probably end up talking about this more later on some other podcasts because I think it's so interesting. But you know, the social media stuff really is a new human experience. A new human experiment, really is. I mean, when you think about, we are extremely primitive beings, and I mean that in the most literal way. I mean, we live in this modern world, and there's things that humans have done for thousands and thousands and thousands of years that have made us the way that we are. And we're now doing a whole bunch of new stuff that we've never done before. And it truly is. It's like, who knows what, should the earth persist another 50 years, will be like, holy cow, that Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok was like crack cocaine and literally rotted our brains out. I mean, I'm exaggerating, but we don't know the consequences of a lot of the stuff we're doing. And I mean, that's just the truth. It might sound far-fetched, but it's actually not. You know, you look back at all kind of stuff that humans have done that in the moment they, you know, didn't understand. And obviously, you know, it would be more social consequences, you know. And we really didn't even scratch the surface of it. We just kind of introduced this idea of validation and identity as it relates to social media. And, you know, some people can, you know, if the shoe fits, wear it. If it doesn't, don't. But what do you think, Josh? You're trying to build a social media empire.
It's coming along.
Put
too.
A kink in your tail.
No, I think I'll be okay. If I wake up in the morning and all my followers are gone, I think I'll be okay.
Yeah.
It is interesting though that you see so many people like I, the term influencer now. I mean, it's just thrown around and it's like a status symbol. And really, you know, when you think about it. And when you think about the things that really matter in life, you know, I do want to influence people with my life, but I also want to come in contact with people. I want people to know who I am, not just what I portray, you mm-hmm. know? And so I think the relational aspect of things is way more important to me than a picture I put on Instagram or Facebook. And, you know, it just in the simple example with Keith, you know, I've never met Keith until this weekend. We've communicated on Instagram. And when he messaged me, I said, man, let's go together. And because that's what's really valuable to me. And I think those are the things that are going to help you. I mean, we have an epidemic right now of mental health and relational disconnection. And to be able to spend time with people and to share life, that's what's really valuable. And I think it's great what Rustin shared with you, Rusty. Just, hey, Dad, I want more. Basically, he's saying, I want more of you. I don't want just the information. I want more of you. And to have your immediate relational sphere reach out to you like that means a lot. And
it's a huge win.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, how many dads would kill to have their sons say that?
Oh, yeah.
And then how many sons would kill to have a dad that they feel like they could say that to? Well, that's phenomenal.
Well, the only thought I have, and I sure don't know the answer to it, is why do I want to be on Instagram? Am I trying to create an image of myself to other people? I mean, I find it entertaining. Why do people want to be on Facebook? What are we doing? I mean, what's the deal? And we all do it. It's apparently in all of us, this experience that you're talking about, this experiment we're going through.
Yeah.
I mean, who would have ever thought people would want to put their life out there in front of everybody to look at? Of course, you have the ability to pick what you put on the social media.
I remember when I remember us making fun of Facebook, like people saying, man, people are like putting like, oh, I'm washing clothes today.
Yeah. Remember when Facebook, when you got on it, when it first came out, it would say like Josh Spielmaker is. And then it had the blank. And I just always felt like, who in the world would care that I'm doing the laundry right now?
Yeah.
And I think like you said earlier, Gary, like what makes us want to do that? It's the same thing. Like you got a really good story you want to share. And if I know I've got a really good story and I'm halfway decent at sharing it, I love sharing it because I know the buddies that I share it with, I'll have the room and I'll have that feeling like they like me, they validate me. I'm as cool as I would like to think I am, at least for a moment. And I think there's a twinge of that inside of every time I've got something, I actually think if I put it on Instagram, somebody might like it. And I'm like, oh, well, this will be cool. It's that same kind of moment before I'm going to tell this story to the little group that I'm in. But now it's so much easier to do because a picture to me is easier to post than actually like saying something.
It's just it's a digital version of what
telling
is happening inside of relationships.
Yep.
I mean, like, you know, when I go to Instagram or Facebook, like, I am just exponentially increasing the amount of people that hear about my fishing trip, my deer, my turkey, or what I did with my family.
Yeah, and professionals have that. But the average lady sitting in a home or me sitting in my home, I'm not too sure we're not trying to cultivate a healthy image of ourselves. I mean, I never show a picture of my stuff I like when it's dirty. You know, I mean, it's always clean and shiny. And so, I mean, I think we're trying to create something that you know, there's a little truth to it.
I will say, look on my Instagram. It's nothing but does on there. I'm posting them, boys. I'll post whatever.
Bros and does.
That's exactly. Hey, but even the professionals on Instagram, and I'm pointing to Clay, they're doing the same thing. They're putting an image on there, and it's cleaned up. You're just
they're branding themselves to make more money. I think we're branding ourselves. Mm-hmm. We're all so much alike. I'm so much like the Clovis people.
Yeah,
I mean it hadn't changed much really. We're all pretty much alike.
We've been telling stories and trying to grab the room since the beginning of time, and now we just have a little different way of doing it. It's mm-hmm. Facebook or it's Instagram. Who knows what it'll be mm-hmm. in a decade. But it's still, we're trying to tell a story and get recognition and form a kind of community around ourselves. Same song.
You know, the stuff you see in caves. I mean, it's like, look at this big buck I killed here.
Yeah, exactly. Buffalo.
They didn't draw does on the caves.
No, they didn't.
I do not like Rusty.
Big bison.
Hey, I had a guy this week send me a replica Folsom Point, but it's not stone. It's a 3D printed Folsom Point.
That's pretty cool.
That, as I understand it, he was there when it was found. And I don't have it. I don't have it in my hand.
Wait, he found a 3D.
Wait a minute. He found.
He 3D printed a 3D printed.
He
point.
Found. He was with somebody when they found a real Folsom Point. I mean, just a incredible Folsom Point. I'll show it to you guys later. And super thin. I mean, just like as thin as the bill of that hat. And when you just look at every single angle on it, the fluting on it is concave and just beautiful. And anyway, he sent me a really nice letter. His last name's Bender. I've got to get around to He wrote me a letter. I wish you'd have given me his email address.
Like a handwritten letter?
Yeah, it was beautiful.
People still do that?
Man, he did. And he knew it. I'd read it. And I did. It was really cool. Yeah.
Folsom, too bad you Folsom don't know people. How to write.
I know. I don't even know where the post office is in this town. Hey, okay. March the 5th. If you want to talk about bears and bear hunting in this part of the world, mid-America, the Southern Highlands, come to Rogers, Arkansas, March the 5th. Moe's going to be there. Josh will be there.
I'm gonna be there.
I don't know. Maybe Dan will be there.
I'm gonna try.
We're gonna. It's called the Black Bear Bonanza. Arkansas BHA is putting it on, and we're gonna. It's a real deal lineup. We're gonna have a black bear biologist panel. I'm pretty sure the Arkansas bear biologist Myron Means will be there. I believe Laura Conley, the Missouri bear biologist, or large carnivore biologist up there will be there. And probably somebody from Oklahoma. And I'm going to be there. We're going to have an owl hooting contest. Man, I would drive across the country to go to a real live owl hooting contest. Yep, you're going to have to compete against Mo Shepard.
I'm not even Good stepping luck. Up to the plate. Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to give a foreshadowing sneak peek that'll blow your mind. 2 days ago, I was in Will Primo's house, and we owl hooted. He owl hooted for me. I owl hooted for him.
And what he like? What was
I'm not
going to
tell you what was said.
Have you improved lately?
I'm probably the same. I found owl hooters don't improve much. They just kind of either have
you
it or they
the
don't.
Plateau.
Yeah, you plateau out. But how about that?
That's pretty cool.
Pretty good.
You'll see it.
That's pretty cool.
Trust me, you'll see it.
How old is Will Primo?
Crow calling too.
Will Primo is
70 years old.
Should we say his age? I mean, we're just telling all.
Yeah, well, I know. I mean, he keeps some secrets.
I mean,
yeah, he was young when I was young.
He was young when you were. So I'll just leave it there. That was the foreshadow. So March 5th.
That's pretty cool.
Come. It's an all-day event. I think we're going to try to render some bear fat.
Oh, cool.
There's a lot of stuff going on.
Where's it at? It's at the
Quail Barn in Rogers,
Quail.
Arkansas.
Benton County Quail Barn in Rogers.
It's like an event center type deal. Number two, as we're closing down, you can buy bear grease hats now on themeateater.com. That man, they were out of stock for like 4 months, and they just came back in. And so
I ordered mine the other day.
You got
my wife ordered mine for me.
Good.
Or hey,
good.
Where's the panther hat, man?
Man, you know what?
Sometimes
promises don't come through as quickly as you'd like them to, and I have nothing to do with that, unfortunately. They're coming. Yeah, we're gonna have some believer. It's got a Black Panther on it.
You got a believer.
You're a believer of.
And it's gonna happen. So that's gonna happen. There's also some Bear Grease shirts. There's one that says Acorn, and it's got an acorn with a big mustache that says Bear Grease. It's a cool shirt. It's a great shirt.
It is a good looking shirt.
There's also a shirt.
Those are on the website,
I think. Yeah, those are for sale. You can buy those right now. There's a shirt that has a mason jar of bear grease, and it says bear grease, and it lists all the things you can do with bear grease. And there's another one that I haven't promoted that's a big barred owl flying through the air, and it says, hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo, barred owl, like a quote. You see what I'm saying?
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so, that's awesome. Anyway, barred owl, bear grease, and then the Acorn shirt. So you can check all that out. Thanks, guys. Hey, I hope it was clear that the reason I could interrogate these guys like I did is because these are two of the best deer hunters that I know, bar none, for sure. So that's the only reason I can manhandle these guys. And
it's
and
an honor to be in the room.
You don't know all that many hunters then, do you?
No, you guys, both of you guys, for sure, at the very top of the heap in my book for this part of the world, for sure. So thank you guys for being a part of the podcast.
Thanks for the kind words.
Yeah. Rest of you doe hunters. Good luck.
Doe hunters and the 4-inch
hey,
trout
Dad,
catchers.
Did you have you want to tell us that story you were dying to tell?
No, not really. You know, the thing that I enjoy the most right now is just, getting out in the wilderness in a side by side. So, you know, but no, I don't.
You're done. Secret.
I'm done. I'm done.
Secret. You have to wait.
Getting out of the wilderness.
Wait on that.
Burning the side by side of the ground.
Burn to the ground. You want to see that picture? It's on my Instagram.
Yeah, I've looked at it a few times.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, if you guys like to cook outdoors, and you oughta, you should check out the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle. So this is a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools. It's pre-seasoned with food safe oils and ready to cook on right out of the box. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. This griddle heats evenly edge to edge, reaching all the way up to 500 degrees. Get fired up for your new Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle.
Sport Dog is the most recognized brand in the hunting dog training industry. The Sport Dog promise to customers is simple: gear the way you design it. Every product Sport Dog builds is meticulously designed and rigorously tested in the field, ensuring it withstands the toughest conditions you and your dog may encounter. Using tracking equipment on my squirrel and coon dogs is extremely important to me. Get 20% off your first purchase using the code BEARGREASE. Go to www.sportdog.com/BEARGREASE to learn more.